Greetings, exalted ones. This is Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast. And as promised, I'm going to try something different this week. I'm going to do a longer piece, broke up over several episodes. I'm thinking three episodes. I'm going to do three episodes in close succession with sections of a book, an audio book, that I've put up there for sale over on audible.com. Let me put up the windows so that we'll have some privacy. This piece is called Birth of a Sidekick. And it's a Western, it's a pseudo-Western, it's a story. That's definitely a story that was inspired a few years ago by when I was reading Westerns. I read Lonesome Dove by Larry McMurtry, and holy cow, I loved that book. It's so much that it surprised me. I was just like, wow, it there was so much like pathos and passion and regret and good and bad in that book that I was just like, wow, is this what Westerns are like? Holy cow. And so I read a lot of Westerns trying to, what's the word, recapture that sensation. And, you know, I discovered that not all books are Lonesome Dove. But during that period, I kept thinking of how fun it would be to write a series of Western short stories about the adventures of a hero. And, you know, he would go from town to town. He would have some little mission or a bounty, or someone would ask for his help, and he would help them, and then he would move on to the next town. It's not at all an original idea. No, far from it. But it was not something I had written before, and I thought, oh, you know what I want to do? I want to give this hero a kid sidekick, a child sidekick like Robin or Speedy or Bucky or Aqualad or Short Round. You know, just somebody who is there so that the hero isn't by himself, somebody that the hero can explain things to, who can have questions, who can be afraid, and the hero is brave, and who can help the hero out when he gets into a jam. And I wanted it to be a kid, because I love that idea of the child sidekick. The idea of like a 10-year-old boy or an 8-year-old boy, Dick Grayson, at Batman's side, and Batman is dour and violent and pessimistic, and yet he's got this little boy who's bright-eyed and optimistic and enjoys going out at night. He gets a thrill. He's not consumed by this shadow of his dead parents like Bruce Wayne is, to go out and, you know, avenge their death or patrol the city. You know, there have been lots of interpretations of Batman, but it's really rare that somebody presents Batman as a happy character who just, he can't wait to get out on the street and clean up the town, because that's what we do, Robin. That's what heroes do. He is haunted. He is, in some ways, crazy. I like the interpretation of Batman as being as crazy as a lot of his rogues gallery. But to have this child who's not crazy, who's not he's damaged because he's an orphan, but who still retains innocence, who still retains the simple pleasures in life that Bruce had stomped out of him when he was 10 years old or 8 years old or however old he was when Thomas and Martha were killed. That is just fascinating to me, and I've never seen it done. Now, I know that Batman the Animated Series, people say, well, that had Robin and that worked. And yeah, to be honest, I've seen a few episodes of the animated series, but it's not real to me like the movies are or the comic books. And so I still say, you know, I've just never seen it done. I've got a bias against cartoons that I don't know how to get over. When something is when the bad guy says, destroy them, I always go, oh, right, this isn't for me. This is for little kids. I think destroy them is probably the worst example. But, you know, it comes up over and over again. And I don't know how to overcome my bias against cartoons. Anyway, I came up with this idea of, I wanted to start the story with the Robin character being chosen and going out into the Wild West with this hero and the adventures that they would have together. And somewhere along the way, I sort of lost sight of that. A different story came out of it than I intended for there to be. And you'll find, if you're a writer, that happens, that you surprise yourself. It is almost as though the story was previously written and you discovered it and were surprised where it went. So what I've done is I sat down and I recorded the full audiobook, and I think it took me like two nights, you know, like two sittings to do, and then that just sat there. And I think I recorded this probably September or October of 2013, and yeah, it's just been that long, because I've taken on all these responsibilities for audiobooks, and, you know, the stuff for my own pleasure, or the stuff that's not the Doonstief, has to just sit on the back burner. It has to just sit and wait, and I'm not terribly motivated, especially with the Rish Outcast, as you know, and so it's just sat there, and the dang story has sat there as well, unpublished, even until the recording tonight of this. And in the next episode, I will tell you about what motivated me to do this, to sit down and record the dang, to sit down and do the podcast version and to actually publish it. By the time you hear this, Birth of a Sidekick is available on Amazon.com. It's available on Smashwords. You can buy it. It's not going to be tremendously expensive because, you know, I don't expect a lot of people to buy it. But I would be thrilled if they did, so I'm going to make it super cheap. And it's also available, the full audio that you're about to hear some of, on audible.com. And you can pay for that. I don't get to decide how much they charge. Audible makes that decision. But if you'd like to go out there and support me, you're welcome to do that. Or if you want, just stick around. And I will be back. I'm planning on it being next week, but it'll probably be 10 days, maybe even 2 weeks before I get the next one up. I hope it's not a month, but you know me. It always takes longer than everything. Always takes longer than you expect it to be. So enjoy, and I will talk to you soon.
Birth of a Sidekick, written by Rish Outfield. The entire orphanage was abuzz. Because Christmas was such a small affair at San Domingo's, consisting of singing, Bible reading, and simple games, it is unfair to say it was like Christmas at the school. The closest thing they'd ever had was when, 7 years before, Regina Del Lago, a wealthy old widow in town, had left all that she had to the orphanage. There had been toys for every boy, better meals for a while, new sheets, new books, new toilet facilities, and a sense of beginning and possibilities. Of course, Ben Parks was too young to remember that. He had only been 3 when Miss Del Lago passed on, and her gifts had long since broken, faded, or fallen apart. San Domingo's Orphanage for Boys was not a big place, not even for those days. 1 priest, 5 nuns, 2 employees, around 50 boys. It was located at the base of the Arizona Hills, near a town named Camino del Oro, but called Widow's Peak, due to the mostly elderly female population. It was a poor town, and a very poor orphan school, and most of the boys who lived there had little hope of adoption or a better life until the school finally kicked them out the door and into the hot, cruel world. Benny Parks was one of those boys. Raised by his aunt until age 2, he had no memory of life outside these walls. Newly turned 11, he was tall and thin, with black hair and green eyes, his skin lighter than most of the boys, who were part or all Mexican, and a round, earnest face that looked to the horizon and longed to be there, especially on this particular week. The reason so many imaginations were so engaged was due to one thing. The lean rider was coming. Every boy knew what that meant, even if they called him the famous Señor Cook or El Vaquero Liviano. The man was many things: a gun for hire, a messenger, a bounty hunter, a security guard, and a hero. The idol of every child in the orphanage, the rider had made a name for himself in the Southwest by bringing criminals to justice, preventing catastrophes, saving lives, and winning marksmanship tournaments. He had had his name in the paper, been celebrated locally, was memorialized in books and magazines, and even had a folk song written about him. Everyone in Widow's Peak had tales to tell about the great gunfighter and of the many bad men he had put in the grave, or good women he had put in the bed. But that wasn't why Benny Parks and his schoolmates loved the famous cowboy. It was because Jerome Cook, the lean rider, was one of them. Sister Mary Beth and Hermana Peña were both old enough to remember when Cook had been a child at San Domingo's, living within those same walls, sleeping under the same blankets, dreaming of a day when he'd be out, when he'd be more than just an Arizona orphan, when he'd be somebody. It was a point of pride and a subject of inspiration for every boy there, whether Mexican or gringo. And there was more. Cook didn't experience his adventures alone. He had a youthful sidekick, a trainee that he taught everything he knew. A boy who went with him, rode by his side, was photographed next to him, and went on to his own career when he came of age. All of the previous sidekicks, without exception, had gone on to bigger and better things, even if one of those was now a preacher in Carson City. Every boy in San Domingo, even little Mateo Molina, born with no legs, dreamed of being the lean rider's sidekick, of shaking the dust from the orphanage and living the life of a hero, the life of someone who mattered. For Jerome Cook remembered his roots, and every few years would return to San Domingo's to pick another young man to be his sidekick, someone to be his helper and friend. And that time had come once again. There was a buzz throughout the rooms, church, and play yard, the kind of electrical energy you feel right before a great storm. A buzz of infectious excitement and hope. Whichever of them the writer picked would walk out of the orphanage, the sidekick to this great man, and would learn all sorts of life lessons in their time together, not to mention how to shoot fast and shoot first, live off the land, and make the best of every situation. It would mold him into the man he would be tomorrow, whether that was the hardest working cowboy ever to be born of woman, or the most renowned sheriff a western town was ever fortunate enough to have. Kind of like being dealt a royal flush in life, and they all knew it. The children put on their best faces. Hair that was rarely, or never, combed, suddenly found itself brushed down and in place. Boys who seldom, or never, sat still were somehow able to force their feet in one place and their hands to themselves. Morning of the fateful day passed, and right before noon, the man arrived. He strode quietly into the play area, where 43 children stood, the 3 who were unable to stand, 2 from polio and 1 from leglessness, sat jealously by, watching the gunslinger like devout worshippers before an altar, or the avaricious before a bag of gold nuggets. Cook silently removed a handkerchief from his bag. It held several small stones. He tossed the stones at certain boys. 2 fumbled for the stones but dropped them. 3 more missed entirely. 1 poor bastard was struck in the throat and bawled quietly for 5 minutes afterward. Only 2 caught the stone in the air.
"Face west," he said.
And Ben, though he was not one of the 2 the gunslinger addressed, immediately turned in the direction of Lake Chico, his favorite place in the whole world. One of the boys, Miguel, simply stood, staring at the rider. He hadn't understood the man's command, it seemed. The other boy, Carl, paused, looked toward the sun, then immediately faced north. The lean rider frowned, said,
"Thank you,"
and glanced back at the crowd. Ben was turning back to face forward and was surprised when he saw the gunslinger looking at him.
"North,"
the rider said. Ben, embarrassed, pointed the same direction that Carl had been facing, then quickly put his hand at his side, in case he was out of line. The gunslinger reached into his pocket, pulling out the handkerchief, and removed another stone. He seemed to weigh it in his hand, then quickly tossed it in Benny's direction.
"Oh, please, God, let me catch it,"
Ben prayed silently, and made a grab for the rock. He didn't have to see it to know he had missed. It hit him in the breastbone with an audible thump. Immediately, though, Ben dropped to his knees and caught the rock before it hit the ground. He rose, unsure of what to expect, and found the rider still looking at him.
"Como te llamas?"
the gunslinger asked.
Ben Parks?
Benny said, not sure how to answer that question in Spanish.
¿Cuántos años tienes?
Quickly, Benny tried to count in his mind, but he couldn't do it silently.
11, sir.
11,
the rider repeated, no trace of revelatory emotion in his voice.
No hablas español.
Ben could feel tears playing at the corners of his eyes. He'd promised himself he wouldn't cry today, no matter what happened. But how could he explain that he understood, but couldn't really make the sounds with his tongue?
Un poco, sir,
he said. The man sniffed, but in amusement or disdain was anyone's guess.
And what do you speak?
English? Inglés, I mean?
The gunslinger looked down at his hand, where the handkerchief still sat, and opened it for another stone. There were no more. So he simply tossed the handkerchief into the air above him. The boys were not to approach the lean rider. They were supposed to stay where they stood. It was the first rule they had been given after, "Don't speak unless he speaks to you." As the kerchief began its downward descent, Ben had no time for deliberation. He darted out of his place in line to catch the cloth. Whether due to a rock or his own traitor legs, he stumbled, falling not to his knees, but hard onto his stomach. His breath gone, he lunged forward, pulling the handkerchief from the air a second before it touched the dusty ground.
"Sister Mary Beth," he heard the rider say in front of him.
She stepped out of the line and approached the gunslinger. She smiled and looked at his face appraisingly, almost like a proud mother.
"Jerome,"
she said softly.
"This one,"
he said to her. She nodded and turned to the boys.
"Senor Cook has chosen Benny Parks."
There was scattered weak applause, mostly from the adults, and several audible sighs. Some of the younger boys began to cry. Sister Mary Beth repeated her statement in Spanish, then said,
"Benny, go and gather your things. The rest of you stand quietly where you are while Mr. Cook speaks to you."
The gunslinger looked at her, puzzled, while she said the same in Espanol. As far as he was concerned, he'd said all he needed to say. The nun leaned in and whispered something. The man only stared at her for a moment. What could she have said? Then nodded. He turned to the children and cleared phlegm from his throat.
"Though I, am not choosing you today, I'll be back soon for more help. It is, important that you study hard, learn the most you can from the..."
Sister Mary Beth tapped the gunslinger's arm, interrupting him.
"In Spanish, Jerome,"
Ben heard her say. "Oh," he said, sounding very much like a bewildered student rather than a hero. He started his inspirational speech again, this time in drawling Mexican. Ben had risen to his feet again, in pain due to his fall, but numb to it. He couldn't believe he had been chosen. Of course it was what he had wanted, what they had all wanted. But Ben hadn't really held out much hope for it, especially from the stories the older boys recounted. He unclenched his hand. Blood had seeped from his scraped palm to soak into the handkerchief. Ashamed, he considered not returning it to the gunslinger, in case that angered the great man. But it was wrong to keep something that didn't belong to him, something the sisters had drilled repeatedly into every boy's head. He held it out to the writer, who was telling the boys that reading could help them get better work, and sleep was for those who had nothing else to live for. The man took the cloth, nodded, and continued his speech. Ben went back into the orphanage, passing the hateful glares of his schoolmates and friends. One of the boys, Diego Ayala, elbowed Benny hard in the ribs. Ben was tempted to mention this to the staff, using his newfound position to get Diego the punishment he deserved, but instead walked on. The time for bringing justice would come soon enough. Let that be his last memory of San Domingos, just in case he ever got homesick, or the sun was too hot, or his master's tasks got too rough. Less than a minute later, he was happy again anyway. In the big sleeping quarters for the older boys, Ben knelt to get his few belongings from under his bed. He noticed how dusty his pants were from his fall and unconsciously brushed it himself. He owned a little knapsack, a broken cigarette lighter, and a little cross given to him by a woman who had talked about adopting him, but had chosen another. Also among Ben's personal effects was a magazine he had borrowed from Miguel Bautista, the boy who hadn't faced West. He put the magazine on the bed, leaving it there. It was tattered and widely read. One of the stories advertised on its faded cover was The Lean Rider and the Outlaw Injun. "Goodbye, San Domingo," he said to the bed, the walls, the cracked and occasionally leaky ceiling. "When I come here again, it'll be as a man." Benny Parks walked back through the play area, his little pack over his shoulder. He nodded at the priest, nuns, and instructors, giving a smile to his closer friends among the orphans. Some smiled, some looked away. Others simply stared blankly, a trick everyone in the school learned after only one or two missed opportunities to be adopted. Just inside the gate to the outside world, the writer was waiting, chatting quietly with Sister Mary Beth. As she saw Ben approach, she patted Jerome Cook on the head, as though he were still one of her charges, and started back inside. Subtly, he pulled her back and slipped something into her hand. It looked like paper money.
"He's adopting me,"
Benny realized, and was filled with pride. It felt good, in a way he wasn't really used to. Sister Mary Beth hugged Ben as he passed by her, though they had never been very close. Then Ben took his place by the gunslinger. The writer put his hat back on, a water-stained tan thing surrounded by a leather strap lined with bullet casings.
"Adios, muchachos," he said to the group.
None of them looked as pleased to see him go as they had to see him arrive. A few of them, mostly the youngest, were still weeping quietly into their hands or sleeves. Benny waved at his ex-classmates and friends, but didn't say anything aloud. He also felt like tears might come, and didn't trust his own voice. Tied to the hitch right beyond the courtyard was the lean rider's horse, a huge gray beast with speckles of black around its legs. There was a scar on its left flank. Looked like a bullet wound.
"You know him?" Cook asked the boy.
"Sure,"
Ben said, remembering from the thrilling stories and the extra thrilling orphan gossip.
"That's Winchester."
"Yep."
In one amazing move, the cowboy was astride his horse, high enough to touch the clouds.
"That one's yours, kid."
Tied next to Winchester was an unsaddled pony, two Indian blankets tied on its back. It was hungry and slim, unmarked and beautiful. The boy's eyes went wide.
"Pony doesn't have a name," the lean rider said. "Guess you'll have to work on that."
Benny grinned from ear to unwashed ear. It was only lunchtime, and already this was the best day of his life.
"You can ride, can't you?" Cook asked.
Ben looked at the pony, a shiny brown animal with huge black eyes. He had never been a good rider, in the few times he had been allowed to, but he was determined to stay on this one, if it broke his fingers and legs to do so. He simply said,
"Yes, sir."
The rider nodded toward his mount and said,
"Good."
Benny gripped the mane and stretched his leg up to get on. He slid back down, but made it on the second try. They began to ride, casually, away from the orphanage, and toward town. Almost immediately, the pony started lagging behind.
"You'll have to do better than that, kid. Scoot up farther. Hold on with your legs as much as your hands. Comprendis?"
"Yes, sir."
In front of him, Cook clapped his hands together and expressed more than a little gratitude that his new protege spoke English. Ben tried to catch up to the cowboy, but wasn't sure how to make the horse speed up.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean my tongue weren't made for speaking Spanish."
He exaggeratedly rubbed his jaws.
"All of them rrrs and nns make my mouth hurt."
Ben smiled.
"I feel that way too sometimes. The hardest word for me is perro."
The rider nodded.
"So don't you let me catch and you speak a lick of it unless you have to, you hear? These last months got me sick to death of goddamn Mexicans."
The boy inhaled sharply. He couldn't help it. At San Domingo's, the easiest way to earn a whipping was to break the second commandment. And it was always worse, for some reason, if you were heard doing it in English. The cowboy turned in the saddle, catching the surprise on the boy's face, and looked around for danger, thinking primarily of rattlesnakes.
"What is it?"
"You took the Lord's name in vain."
He wasn't shocked, exactly, but just surprised that the man did it so casually. In his experience, blasphemy was done with a surreptitious look around and a whisper.
"Not hardly," said the cowboy. He looked up at the clouds and shouted, "Jesus Christ!"
The booming voice echoed off the nearby hillside like a gunshot. His crooked teeth made a proud grin, and he eyed his young companion.
"Now that was taking the man's name in vain."
"Oh, yeah,"
smiled the boy, reddening. He was still a bit shaken, but chided himself for it. He was liable to see a lot worse than swearing in the outside world, so he'd best tough up about it. They rode a few miles, mostly without speaking. Benny wanted to ask the man all sorts of questions about their terrain, about the weather, about where they'd be going, about past adventures, about what made those kinds of tracks, about what he should call him, about where they'd be sleeping, about where his jobs came from, about what the books called the Code of the West, and about what Ben's tasks would be. But he was too timid about asking. It was uncomfortable for him to ride the brown pony for so long. After an hour, he felt sore and stretched out, but he wouldn't complain. He would walk alongside Cook and Winchester if it meant leaving the orphanage for a life of opportunity. They didn't have a lot of food, and their evening meal was not very remarkable. Some dried fruit, a few slices of what might have been summer sausage, a pair of rolls from the orphanage.
"Don't worry, we'll have soup tomorrow," said the rider.
"What?"
"You're not eating. Don't you like it?"
Ben had been waiting for the rider to sit down next to him, having been trained not to eat until the teachers and staff had been seated and the blessing had been said.
"Sure," said Ben.
"So what's the holdup, kid?"
The cowboy sat down on a flat rock, already digging into one of his rolls.
"Oh, I thought..."
Benny stammered.
"Well, I thought you'd want to bless the food."
Again, any orphan who touched his food before the prayer was liable to get a whack, much less just commence eating. The rider eyed him suspiciously.
"Why?"
"Why?"
"You think it'll make us sick if you don't?"
"No, I just..."
Ben thought about it. He didn't want to admit that it was just habit. Then he said,
"To show that I'm grateful for it."
"Oh, all right. But none of this Padre Nuestro Madre de Dios stuff, all right? You ain't in Saint Domingo no more."
It bothered the boy to hear that. But he wasn't sure if it was because he loved the people back at the orphanage, or if he was honestly offended. Regardless, he nodded, then bowed his head. The writer did the same. Ben waited for him to take off his hat. Then, when he realized that wasn't forthcoming, he went on with his prayer.
Dear God, thank you for the day we've been given and this food that's been prepared for us. Help it to make us strong and healthy. Thank you for the sunny day and the breeze to make us feel less hot. And thank you for letting Senor Cook pick me to be his sidekick. Please help me to make him proud. Amen.
The boy opened his eyes. Amen, the cowboy said quietly. Ben was surprised to see the man's hat in his hands. They ate in silence for a few minutes, the sign of a hungry pair.
What is it we're eating again?
Ben asked, in between chewy bites of what was surely not summer sausage. It wasn't that it tasted bad, but there was something slightly sour about the meat, and it was so thin.
You sure you want to know? The writer asked.
Well, sure,
Ben began before he could think about it.
Don't I?
The cowboy shrugged, apparently all the deciding he was going to do for Ben. The boy took one more bite, savoring it between his teeth and cheek, then nodded.
I'm sure, sir.
Prairie dog, Cook said, beginning to grin.
Ben swallowed, deciding whether he was going to be sick or not. He wasn't. No tents, no shelter. They slept out under the stars. The writer had told him to build the fire. Ben gathered dry wood and sagebrush. Cook said he liked the smell, making a little pile between a trio of desert rocks. For a moment, he had been terrified he was supposed to do it with two sticks or a flint and stone, but the writer said his name and tossed a box of matches his way. Even with that, it had been surprisingly difficult to get the fire going. The wooden matches were temperamental, and the constant breeze did its best to keep the fire from catching. And he had to monitor it like a prison guard to keep it from dying. Benny found it difficult to fall asleep that first night. But although the ground was lumpy, and there was a cool wind blowing the whole night through, it was his mind that kept him from drifting off. What if the writer changed his mind? What if he decided he'd made a mistake, picked the wrong boy, needed to swap for a better one? He'd go back to the orphanage, he supposed. It would happen, or it wouldn't. There was no use worrying about it. Not that he could stop worrying.
That's where we're going to end for today. As I said, you can buy this on Amazon.com, Audible.com, Smashwords.com. Go out there and pick it up if you want, or just meet me, same bat time, same bat channel, for the next segment of it, and we'll talk some more. Thank you very much for listening. This is Rish Outfield. Party on.
The music in today's episode was presented by Kevin MacLeod of the website incompetent.com. The Rish Outcast is presented under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives License. That license enables you to share the file with anyone, but not to charge for it or alter it. A license to kill, by the way, enables me to kill anyone I please, whenever I please. You judge which is better.